with desires and ambitions that the living entity enjoys in the subtle body. Actually, the living entity is in the subtle body. Even though the gross body apparently changes, and even though he inhabits the gross body on various planets, all the activities performed by the living entity in the subtle body are called illusory because they are not permanent. Liberation means getting out of the clutches of the subtle body. Liberation from the gross body simply involves the transmigration of the soul from one gross body to another. When the mind is educated in Krishna consciousness or higher consciousness, in the mode of goodness, one is transferred either to the upper heavenly planets or to the spiritual world, like in the planets. One therefore has to change his consciousness by cultivating knowledge received from Vedic instructions from the Supreme Personality of the Godhead through the disciplic succession. If we train the subtle body in this life by always thinking about Krishna, we will transfer to Krishna Loka after leaving the gross body. This is confirmed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Janma karma chamedi yamu namadhi bhaktadaha chakadiham panachanda noiti mamiti sojana. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this mature world, but attains my eternal abode over Arjuna. Bhagavad Gita 4.9. Thus, the change of the gross body is not very important, but the change of the subtle body is important. The Krishna consciousness movement is educating people to enlighten the subtle body. The perfect example in this regard is Ambarish Maharaj, who always engaged his mind on the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Similarly, if in this life we should always fix our mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, who is present in his Archa Vigraha, the incarnation of the deity in the temple, we should also always engage in his worship. If we engage our speech in describing the activities of the Lord and our ears in hearing about his pastimes, and if we follow the regular principles to keep the mind intact for advancing Krishna consciousness, we shall certainly be elevated to the spiritual platform. Then at the time of death, the mind, intelligence and ego will no longer be materially contaminated. The living entity is present, and the mind, intelligence and ego are also present. When the mind, intelligence and ego are purified, all the active senses of the living entity become spiritual. Thus the living entity attains his Satchidananda form. The Supreme Lord is always in his Satchidananda form, but the living entity, although part and parcel of the Lord, becomes materially contaminated when he desires to come to the material world for material enjoyment. The prescription for returning home back to Godhead is given by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita 9.34, Manmana Bhagavad Bhakto Vajati Mam Namaskuru Mam Mavashasi Yukteyam Atanamak Parayanaha. Always think of me and become my devotee, worship me and offer your homage unto me, being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. So, this is in the very beginning of Krishna consciousness, when I was reading Srila Prabhupada's books, Srila Bhagavatam, this the particular section of the Bhagavatam, especially this verse, stood out a lot in my mind. So when I joined Krishna consciousness, there were certain questions due to experiences that I had, both in my subtle body and in the life itself, that I really wanted to get some answers for, and couldn't get any answers until I read the Bhagavad Gita. And of course I found the Bhagavad Gita, and then I came across an active devotion. I read those. Then I met a devotee, and actually the first time I ever spoke to a devotee, he invited me to the temple, and I came to the temple, and I just decided, I was fascinated with the books, and I thought, these devotees, I've got the Gita, I've got the Nectar Devotion, and these devotees have so many books. And so it was an invitation I couldn't resist. And so anyway, I joined here in Melbourne, and the next day I left on Ramaswamy's bus, and he had a full set of books on the bus. And every day I would, you know, because we worked from, we got up at about 3:30, 4 o'clock, even while we were travelling, and we were doing Sankirtan every day, you know, we were cooking, preaching, everything. And we had a morning, full morning program, Mangalati, chant 16 rounds, and you know, Bhagavatam, Nectar Devotion class at lunchtime, Bhagavad Gita class in the evening. But somehow or another, I still managed to get a lot of time to read these books. And when I come across this, it was a, you know, this particular section, it was a you know, something I was really looking for, because I had a lot of experiences, you know, on the platform of the subtle body, and I had read different books. I don't know if you've ever heard of Lok San Rampa. They're sort of novels, but they're about the Buddhist. And so as a teenager, I read that, and he used to astral travel. So he'd go into a meditation, and then the subtle body would leave the body, and then he would travel around. And so it was about this Buddhist who could astral travel. Quite fascinating, the whole series, probably 10 books or so, I can't read them all. And sometimes, for the purposes, he could also enter and join in with a cat or something in order to, you know, have a physical body as well that would go to places where he, as a Buddhist monk, couldn't go, wasn't invited. Anyway, I was quite fascinated with that whole concept, because I was also having different experiences in astral travel, where I understood that from reading such books, previously I was having certain astral sort of experiences, and then I read that and understood that you can actually take control of that whole process of what you do inside the body. The first time I really took control of my astral body, the subtle body, we call it, the earth, and then they call it the astral body, but it's what we call the subtle body. So I was probably about 7, maybe 8 at most, but when I went to sleep, I dreamt I was on a rocking horse, a huge big rocking horse. And for some reason I actually couldn't get on to sit on it, because I was a little kid. But I put one leg on the wooden part, it was like the bow shaft. I put one leg there, and just sort of rocked, hanging onto this rocking horse. But I got the butterflies in my stomach, you know, you're on a swing. And you swim, you get butterflies in your stomach. Have you ever had that?
Yes.
Well, as kids, we called it butterflies in the stomach. I don't know what the technical term is. But is there a technical term?
Yeah,
Do you know what it is though? You get that, say you're in an aeroplane and it drops or something very quickly and your stomach, you feel this flutter. And so it feels like both of them. So, and that made me wake up, and I actually still had the butterflies in my stomach, so I was literally, I was thinking, you know, that's unusual, it's a dream, but I'm physically feeling the effects of the dream. You know, so as a kid, I thought that's, usually the dreams, you're laying there, you're not really doing it, it doesn't actually affect you. And I thought, I'll go back to sleep, and I'll do it again, because I enjoyed it. So when I went back to sleep, instead of finding myself in the rocking horse, I found myself on top of a big cliff. And just to give you an idea of these cliffs, have you ever seen that cartoon, The Roadrunner and the Coyote? Right? You've seen that? It's huge, big cliffs, you look down, they just, go down to infinity. Right? It was just like that. And I looked over the edge and I thought, oh, you wouldn't want to fall off there, would you? And as soon as I said that, I fell off. And I was plummeting down to earth, and it was exactly lifelike, as if I'd literally fallen out of the plane. And it's like the wind, the pressure on my face from the air, and I was, I could see the ground, I was thinking I was going to die, I was terrified, broke out in sweat, my body was sweating from head to toe, and then just before I hit the ground, I woke up. And when I woke up, I was in absolute terror, complete terror, as if I'd nearly died. And literally, I perspired so much that all my pajamas, were wet and everything like that. So I had to get up and try to, change my bed and everything. So really, it was just pure terror. Anyway, at about that time, there was my brother told me, he said, if you die in your dreams, you'll actually die. Right? So he's about a year older than me. Thanks, dude. And so that terrified me. I started to wonder, what is the connection between the subtle body and the gross body? Would I have actually died if I hadn't hit the ground? So that was my question. So I thought to myself, when I go back to sleep the next night, I wonder if I can get back onto that same cliff, jump off, and see if I actually hit the ground. So at this stage, I'm actually, as you can see, taking charge of what happens when I go to sleep, which also fascinated me that I can actually really, control it. And so I went to bed the next night. And before I went to bed, I was thinking, I'll get back on that cliff. And I went to sleep, there I was, on top of the cliff. And this time, I jumped up. And I was thinking, but I remember before going to sleep, I was thinking, I can't wake up until I hit the ground. I better see if I hit the ground, I've got to see if I die. So actually, when plummeting down, and it was just as terrifying, although I was starting to like it. But I was terrified about hitting the ground. And it was so terrifying that just before I hit the ground, I woke up. And I was like, really devastated, And the same night, I thought, no, I've got to see if I can hit the ground. And so I went back to sleep. Found myself at the same cliff. Jumped off. This time I was sort of backwards, because I thought, the problem is, I'm looking at the ground, so if I don't see it, I probably won't. Then I'll lose it. So I was actually coming down backwards. So therefore, as I was coming down, and then I hit the ground, and I just bounced like a rubber ball. That boom, 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 like that. And then the last one, I woke up, and I laughed my head off. I thought, there you go. My brother, you're wrong. you can actually take control of what happens to them. Anyway, so that was, it was that experience which set me on a bit of a path, you know. Like, I can never look at life the same as other people after that experience. You know, there was like, what on earth is going on? And then sometimes I would actually have premonitions where I'd see something and what I saw come true. And that was also, you know, what is going on there? How can you see something in the future? It means it's something destined. But who's arranged that? How does something get arranged for you in the future? So these, you know, as a young child, these things were, you know, and I remember later on reading in the Bhagavad Gita that when you, if there was some, you know, progress in yoga, any type of yoga, karma yoga, jnana yoga, sangha yoga, bhakti yoga, not really slightly, pretty much you just start where you leave off. So, you know, I understood later on, you know, there must be something in a previous life where these unusual events are somewhat, you're given a little taste of something and it just starts you thinking in a different way. If they didn't happen, you may never ever think, you know, in a different way. You just never think about anything, you know, except Bugs Bunny, the Roadrunner and the Coyote, you know. And then, you know, what I used to then, I did a little bit of, as a teenager, did a little bit of meditation. Actually, what happened, again, you know, just showing the influence of the subtle body, is that I used to get very, very ill as a teenager. When I look back now, there's probably my diet. I don't think my parents knew, you know, good and bad food. And a lot of things I was eating was literally causing me a lot of problems. And so anyway, I used to get these, like an infection in my throat, glands of fear type of thing. Very, very ill, a lot of mucus, maybe this. But one time this friend of mine, she took me to this, she said, I'll take you to this place, and they do a, they'll cure you by a sort of a yogic, sort of a relaxation process. So I went in there, literally, you know, you could have taken me to the hospital, I was really ill. And they got me laid down in bed. And then they got me to meditate on a field of roses, and they asked me, you know, to, you know, and deep breathing and things, and asked me to walk over to one of the roses and smell the flavour of that rose. And of course, when I did that, in my dream, my nose wasn't blocked, so I could actually smell that rose, and I was, you know, just walking around that rose garden in the sunshine, perfectly happy. And then after some time, they gave me a bit of shake, and I heard them saying, gee, you know, you're really gone there. And so I sort of come out of it. And when I woke up, I had no sign of the illness. No sun block, you know, nothing. I literally walked out of there. And of course, so after that, so I took a little bit of interest in yoga, and you know, some people taught me some, you know, deep, proper yogic breathing and what have you. And so before I used to go to sleep, I used to combine the two, that I would, do the deep breathing with the intent that I would sort of go to sleep, but try to maintain a certain amount of focus where you know you're asleep, but you can take charge of your astral travel and just do some things, you know, and see. And sometimes to do that, I used to, on a really, say, the night of a storm, because the idea was you have to completely, say, before you go to sleep, you've got to disconnect with the external body. So during the breathing process, during the deep breathing, you've got to literally have no sense of your body at all. You're just almost like floating in the body. You know, you can't feel anything like that. And so sometimes what I do is on a freezing cold night when there's a big storm, I go out and see, find a little cave on the beach, a little boat shed, because it was so cold, it would test out the process that can you disconnect, can you lay down here, without any bed, without anything like that, just maybe a sleep bag or something, but you have to disconnect, because that would actually help you get into the right situation where you could actually astral travel. And so I would do that. And then, I used to, in my astral travel, I would fly around everywhere. If I wanted, I could fly underwater and just, go to the bottom of the ocean and look at all the fish and the whales and the sharks and like that. For as long as I wanted, without any problem. And sit on a magic carpet, again, as a child, I heard it in, above in the 40 thieves, they would fly on a magic carpet, right? And I thought I'd like to try it. I said, fly on a magic carpet. Trouble is, in the carpet, when I used to look down, I couldn't see because of the carpet. So the next time when I went to bed, I actually had a see-through carpet. in this way, you can... So this, trying to understand, because there's a few novels and you can understand this is, other people experiencing this, they're sort of writing books about it, there's yoga things, but I had no real concept. Is this something for everyone? Is it just for, fiction, is it just some strange thing? I just really have no concept over here. But when I come across the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, it just fully explains the whole concept that you have this, gross material body, and then within that you have the subtle body, which they call the astral body, because astral body was, what is that? Is it like an aura, a light or something? But in the Gita, we understand that the subtle body is the mind, the intelligence, which can then take charge of the mind and discriminate, and the false ego, which keeps our connection, keeps the subtle body's connection between this body, we're attached to this body, although the subtle body can move around. And then, the question would arise, as a teenager, if, what would we like to just go off in the astral body and never come back to this body? why come back to the body lying down in bed? The pitiful condition that I'm living in, why not just, do something else? So, these questions are there, and of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, so here, it explains this. The Prabhupada says, the gross body, and this is in his purport, explaining the translation, the gross body may lie on a bed and rest. And even though the machinery of the gross body is working, so as you can see, this Shvasana Tama, it's breathing, means, like the billows, so it's a machine. So, the machine is there, and the machine is working, represented by breathing. The body, the gross body, may lie in the bed and rest, and even though the machinery of the gross body is working, represented by breathing, the living entity may leave, go into a dream, and return to the gross body. So Prabhupada says, the living entity may leave, go into a dream, and return to the gross body. Now, later in that purport, Prabhupada says, the conclusion is that the subtle body, mind, intelligence, and ego creates an atmosphere of desires and ambitions that the living entity enjoys in the subtle body. So the living entity is the soul. Actually, the living entity is in the subtle body. So there you see, Prabhupada, when he's talking about the living entity, he's saying the living entity is the soul in the subtle body. Even though the gross body apparently changes, and even though he inhabits the gross body on various planets. So Prabhupada, and similarly in the Bhagavad Gita, if you look at chapter 13 of the Bhagavad Gita, whenever Srila Prabhupada refers to the living entity, he refers to the soul. So, time and time again, that's the living entity. So, and from the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, we understand there is the living entity, or the soul, and then there is the field of activity created by the material energy, the body, which is the field of activity is the gross and subtle body, and its interactions, and then there is the supreme lord. So these things there are discussed. So here, this is fascinating that actually, what's being stated here is the living entity of the soul in the subtle body leaves the gross body. So then, you wonder then, if the soul leaves, why doesn't the body die? Huh? So it appears that, if the machinery of the body is working, it's sort of somewhat set in motion, there's a certain amount of power in there, basically everything is dormant, so the body doesn't need a lot of energy. Just the energy that's sort of circulating, the soul can actually leave and come back. So it's like, just remember this, that these days, you get in the car, you can leave the motor running. So as long as there's a bit of fuel in there, the fuel will supply the energy. You can go out, post a letter, jump back in your car, still running. Or previously, especially with the when we used to drive a car with the manual gears, if your car conked out, which happened a lot in those days, so you're driving along and your car stalls while you're driving. You ever had that experience? You probably won't get that so much now with the big cars and automatically. Anyway, so what you would do is that even if the car stalled for a certain amount of time, if you had a good momentum, say you're flying along about 100 miles an hour, where you can get to a hill where you're going down, if you put it in gear and pull the clutch out, it kicks start again. So, in other words, there's enough momentum there and power that with a little adjustment, the whole thing kicks start. So, you know, it appears from this that the soul can actually leave the body, or, you know, so for instance, with the yogis, yogis can expand into what, 8, 9 different forms altogether, maximum. Some can expand themselves once or twice. The Prabhupada, you know, tells the story of one yogi who was his teacher, he was this yogi, and you know, Prabhupada told the story of how the yogi said to this person, "Would you like something?" "Yes, I would like some pomegranates from Afghanistan." And the yogi was sitting there, he said, "Just go into the next room." And when he went in, there was some pomegranates, fresh. You know, the leaves, the little bit of branches, just straight off the tree from Afghanistan. Particular time. So we know the yogis expand into 9 forms, so where is the soul? Which one is the soul then? So obviously, you know, there are what the soul can do with the material body is, you know, quite amazing, because the soul doesn't expand into 9 different souls. And if there's 9 different forms and each of them are in different places doing something, one soul is controlling all those activities. So, you know, it's the mechanics of the body, especially the subtle body, as well, it's, you know, quite fascinating. But as Prabhupada says here, that the soul, the living entity in the subtle body, can actually leave the body and come back. Now, and of course, from that, we can understand that then that helps us to understand, therefore, the soul within the subtle body can leave this body. Therefore, the soul in the subtle body, when this body does no longer operate as a functional body, the soul in the subtle body can leave permanently and go into another place. It's not difficult to understand that, but that gross body, where do we get that? So that's made by someone else, not us. That is, and we understand also that because. As we hear in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that we are conscious within our body. So in other words, and the soul within this body is conscious within this one body, but there is a supreme soul who is conscious within all the entities, and that supreme soul is witnessing and our activities and awarding the particular bodies that we require to fulfill our particular desires. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 13th chapter, see this verse, 1332. Anadittam vigunatvat paramatmayam adhyayam sarityasto pikuntaya nakoruti nalipute. Those with the vision of eternity can see that the imperishable soul is transcendental, eternal, and beyond the modes of nature. Despite contact with the material body, O Arjuna, that soul neither does anything nor is entangled. So just as a person lying on a bed is doing nothing, the subtle body, with the soul, can go off and do so many different activities elsewhere and come back to the same body, which has just been lying on the bed doing nothing. And here is describing that because in the next verse, again, day 33, the sky to its subtle nature does not mix with anything. Although it is all pervading, similarly, the soul situated in Brahman vision does not mix with the body, though situated in that body. So the soul has no activity. So when the body takes birth, actually, the soul does not take birth. When the body dies, the soul does not die. The material activities, the soul has no material activities. Material activities of the body are not activities of the soul. The soul is actually not doing anything. It's dormant. And it doesn't actually mix. Just like in here, there's the air. So the air is here. It doesn't mix with anything. So, and the light. If we look at the light. So the light is here. It's not mixing with anything. So we might think, oh, the light is, you know, illuminated my body. But if I walk out of here, I don't take that light with me because it hasn't mixed with me. So the soul doesn't actually mix with the body. It means that the soul leaves, it doesn't take any, the soul, it doesn't have to take. If the soul is liberated, the subtle body, the gross body, had nothing to do. They never mixed with the soul. None of the activities and none of the entangling reactions of activity ever somehow affiliate with the soul at all. The soul just remains completely just like the light. And therefore it describes it again. Text 34, as the sun illuminates all this universe, so does the living entity, one within the body, illuminate the entire body by consciousness. So, just as the light in this room illuminates this room, it is separate from the room. In the same way, the soul within the body illuminates the body, but is separate from the body, which is like the apartment. It doesn't actually mix with it in the same way. So many activities are being performed in here, and in fact the light is not mixing with any of the activities of this, of what's happening, the activities in this room. Some activities take place in the body, but the soul is not actually mixing with any of the activities taking place in the body. So, understanding that the soul in the subtle body can leave the body in dreaming and astral travel and so many things and then come back to the body, that we can also understand the soul at the end of this body's life can actually go into another body, another planet, then you go, oh, you know, a dog body like that, so it's the same principle. But despite the fact that the soul is doing that, the soul tends to be attached to a particular body as if it's somehow intrinsic with it, but it's not. It doesn't actually mix with it, it doesn't need it, the soul does not need to take another material. We actually don't need to have one of these bodies. And we don't even need the subtle body. That's the point. In the same way, the subtle body ultimately does not leave this particular body, it can go to another body, or it can come back and forth. The soul, we don't actually need this body, we don't actually have to take birth again. We feel that we do, we feel that we must have, you know, a body. Or if I take, you know, so sometimes you ask people, if you, you know, when you do, used to do the primary school programs, I used to like to ask the children this, if you're going to take birth again, what would you like to be? Now, what would you take birth as? Oh, a horse, a shark, and the little boys, I'll be a tiger, you know, chase the girls around the schoolyard and scare them, and so many different things, you know. And I'd say, none of you want to be human? Oh, you know, that doesn't really occur to me. But the thing is, all suffer. No one ever says, I don't want to have a body at all. Yeah, I don't want to take birth again. Because that concept, we're so attached to the concept that to exist, I must have a body, you know, suffer and grow. But we actually don't need it. We don't mix with it. And none of the activities that are formed by the body and the subtle or gross body are actually, the soul doesn't do any of those things. It doesn't need to do any of those things. It has its own spiritual form where it can perform spiritual activities on the spiritual platform, on the liberated platform. That platform, coming to that liberated platform, it describes that if one knows about the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance and activities, that person, upon leaving this body, attains the spiritual world. So, if we understand that the Supreme Soul, who is conscious within, sitting beside the living entity in the heart, alongside the living entity, and he is conscious within all particular bodies. And Krishna explains that although he's situated within the heart, he's also situated in the spiritual world where he performs wonderful spiritual activities. And he comes to this world to demonstrate those spiritual loving activities in this material world. If Krishna never came to this material world to demonstrate that there are pure spiritual activities, we would have no concept that there is spiritual activity for the soul in the spiritual world. And Krishna comes to the world to do that because he, unlike the spirit soul, we become illusion. But Krishna never forgets the actual spiritual activities in the spiritual world. He never forgets his own spiritual position, and he never forgets that we are also in the spirit soul and in the spiritual world. So he can come here because he's not affected. And he comes to display his activities. If we understand these activities of Krishna, they appear very human-like, but they are the activities of the Supreme Lord in his pure spiritual body, and he appears here. He doesn't actually take birth of his creator. And he performs activities to show his loving pastimes and how he is actually the controller of the material energy and the Lord of the spiritual energy and the Lord of all living entities. And then in that final verse, Mangmanava Bhagavato 9:34, Krishna explains that the process is, we must, if the soul cultivates consciousness which is influenced by the modes of material nature, we think in a material way, with material desires and material aspirations. Therefore, we will want a particular body to fulfill those material desires and material aspirations in this world. Why do we keep coming back to another body? It's because we have some purpose to fulfill, some material purposes. Why doesn't someone say, oh, I don't want to take birth again? Because they feel that, well, that's the end of it. But Krishna is saying, no, you don't have to take another material body. You don't think that's everything finished. Because you can have spiritual activities in the spiritual world, in your one eternal spiritual form. So in this material world, we can have millions and millions of different bodies according to our material desires and aspirations. those bodies keep changing. But if those bodies keep changing, and the subtle body keeps changing, there must be, and that happens over millions and millions and millions and millions of lifetimes, sometimes if you read Brahma or demigods, they live for billions of years, there must be something permanent that's different from the changing bodies and different from the changing subtle body, and that is the soul. Why not exist in that permanent, eternal soul, which is our very self? And Krishna explains that you don't have to take a material body, you are eternal, you are Brahman. Have that vision of eternity, you're eternal. If you have that vision of eternity, think of me and my eternal loving pastimes in the spiritual world, and if you do that, you'll call a whole different set of desires and aspirations on the spiritual platform that completely annihilate even the slightest trace of any desires on the material platform. And therefore, Krishna says in that same chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it's imperative we don't have something else. So in verse 29 of that 13th chapter of Gita, Krishna says, one who sees the super soul equally present everywhere in every living being does not degrade himself by his mind, thus he approaches his transcendental destination. So coming to the spiritual platform, on the spiritual platform, understanding I'm an eternal spirit soul. My eternal relationship is with the Supreme Soul in this pure, loving, devotional attitude. By maintaining that pure consciousness and never forgetting Krishna, I can go back to the spiritual world. So these, beginning from dream life, if you follow that process of thought, you can come gradually to the understanding of the soul, and understanding the Supreme Soul, and change your from that perspective, go back to the spiritual world, and which is exactly some of the major events in my life follow that process from dreams, seeing the difference between my gross body, the subtle body, and then gradually the subtle body and the soul. And the soul, the Supreme Soul, and then the material activities. My life actually followed that exact thought process from about the age of 7. So very, so it's a wonderful, preaching. Because for a lot of people, just to start talking about the soul, or talking about the spiritual world, the times that we should always think of God, it's just too much. You have some, for a lot of us, you have to go way, way back and connect the dots. And these verses do that very, very, very nicely. I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments.
Actually, the way things play out in a dream is different from the way they play out in physical life. So I was reading that person, one has access to higher intelligence or a guidance in dream state than waking life. So I was wondering what exactly is the difference between these two states, that we have more access to higher knowledge in, we may have access, open to receiving higher guidance in dream state.
One who is fully self-realized, fully God-conscious, they transcend all the different stages of material consciousness from awake. that on the spiritual platform understanding of eternal relationship with Krishna. If they're sleeping, dreaming, they always remain on the self-realized and God-realized platform. For the those aspiring to be, you know, Satana sitters, you know, liberated bodies, liberated from the Satana Christ body and godly Krishna consciousness. You know, for us, generally, even in awake, we struggle to remember that we're eternal servant of Krishna. And what to speak of, you know, dream time, which is even, you know, less heart we have, generally have less control. So, you know, Prabhupada mentioned once that, you know, someone asked Prabhupada that, Prabhupada, you say we should think of Krishna 24 hours a day. But what about, you know, when I'm sleeping and dreaming? Prabhupada said, if you practice during the day, you always think of Krishna. And he said, then you'll even think of Krishna when you're sleeping. And that's when he gave that example. He said, you know, sometimes when I'm sleeping, I'm dreaming that I'm eating halva, which I think is so nice. I'm eating so much. And he's laughing, you know, because he's just like eating huge amounts of halva continuously. But, you know, so he was pointing out, and it's a very interesting example because, you know, eating prasadam is an aspect of deity worship. You know, we honor prasadam, you know, we're eating, you know, this is Krishna prasadam, you know, this, you cannot get a taste of this Krishna prasadam like that. So when we worship the deity, which is not different from Krishna, we practice, you know, or we preach Krishna consciousness, or chant Hare Krishna, we hear from devotees such as we're doing now, all of those different things. As Krishna says in that verse, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, not for your homage, be completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. So Prabhupada explained that we do that during the day, the more we do it, then even when you're sleeping, you'll also dream of Krishna. So, but if during the day we're not doing that properly, then it's much harder to do that because sleeping and, you know, that's it. But for the for those who are properly situated, they will just, it doesn't matter what state of they are in, they're Krishna conscious. So if they're laying down, and sleeping, even in the deep sleep, they understand, you know, for Krishna service, I must, you know, get this power and that sleep, you know, for the body so that I can serve Krishna, you know, throughout the day. So, you know, for Srila Prabhupada, as an example, if he was sitting there, you know, practically doing nothing, and just sitting there, doing nothing, doesn't appear like you're doing any service, he is still 100% fixed in the mood of being the eternal servant of the Lord in pure love, with intense love. Do you appreciate this? If he's laying down, relaxing, same. That doesn't change, doesn't waver in anything. So that's what, you know, Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita in the 6th chapter, that by detachment and the appropriate practice, then you can attain that point of samadhi. Samadhi, and you know, Krishna says in that 6th chapter, what is samadhi? To always be engaged in devotional service, to always think of Krishna with love and faith, There's no one in a greater state of samadhi or, intimate connection with the Lord, than the devotee of the Lord following this process of Bhagavad Gita 19.4. So it's that practice and detaching oneself from the material world and being completely attached to this spiritual process.
The point you're making about the soul being coming into different bodies.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, I think you gave an example of nine bodies or something like that. Or even in Bhagavatam we find the Kadha Muni expanding himself into nine different forms.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, how is that?
Well, the point that I was making was that we only have one soul, but it's not as if we can divide the soul and the soul half, part of the soul leaves and the soul of the body and part of the soul stays to keep the body alive while asleep. The one soul travels in the subtle body and can come back. With the yogis, there's one soul there. They expand in nine different forms. My question is, in which one of those forms is the soul in? The original one, I would say, and the others, but that one soul appears to have control of other bodies that are both manifesting in the gross and subtle feature, like that. We're not like Krishna, that the one soul can be everywhere. We're described as all pervading in that we can live in many different bodies all throughout the universe, one at a time. But the point I was making there was that it shows the nature of the soul, that it can have a connection with this body, although it's sleeping, and the subtle body and the soul temporarily leave. There's enough energy in the body that it just sort of tips over like a machine laying there dormant. Somehow or another, that the one soul, the yogi, is able to manifest nine different forms, generate the energy to maintain those different forms. It's a very there's one soul, but it can somewhat have a slightly distant nature. There are other ways that one can be in different places at the same time. We understand that the demigods, they can have a partial expansion, although they keep their original form. Brahma exists in, he exists in the Satchaloka, the top of the universe. He exists on Mount Meru, and he exists in the form of Haranikava with the the subtle form of the universal of living entity. So he has three different forms, that one soul. You know, there's only one soul at the moment, but he can simultaneously, because we know him above the time. But it's just plain Gaudism here that when Brahma and Bhumi went to see Brahma, when the earth was overburdened, they wanted Krishna to appear. It is explained by the Acharyas, they went to see Brahma on Mount Meru, because the Bhagavatam had described that the Brahma on Satchaloka was engaged in that musical performance where Ravata had taken his daughter, who then, after that musical performance, took birth there, because Balaram had appeared and married Balaram. So they explained that, you know, Brahma was in Satchaloka listening to the musical performance, and the demigods actually went to the Brahma on Mount Meru. So Brahma is one soul. But he was there, and he was also there, and he has a third subtle form. So, you know, he's not many different souls. I don't know the science of that, you know, but, you know, whether the soul is in all three forms, but I know that the Brahman is just one soul, and yet somehow or another he's maintaining, you know, the form on Mount Meru. At the same time, he's got a form in Satchaloka, and then there's another form called Aranyagarbha there. So it's another example of that one soul. So where is that soul? You know, so
that's
it, yeah. And we know that, you know, when Krishna, you know, was travelling with the different sages, the Asadeva, the Radha, and his so many personalities, he wanted to go see Bhagavata and he wanted to go see Shukadeva at the same time. Now, all those sages and rishis that were with Krishna, they went with Krishna to both places. They were also just one soul. And in that sense, I can understand that because Krishna is all pervading, and you're with Krishna, you can literally be all pervading, that, you know, like that. So, so you know, it's a, you know, there's a lot of mystery to it, but my point was that the soul can leave this body and be in a different body, and both the subtle body and that gross body, somehow or another, they can both actually function. That's the point. And you know, that's shown by the activities of Brahma and you know, where he's functioning in awakened state and doing all sort of activities, not just lying on bed dormant, and the different yogis. So you know, the nature of the soul with the body or expansions of the body is quite phenomenal, although the soul is one. And that's just emphasizing the point that the body, the soul can leave the body with the subtle body and then come back to it. And that body can be maintained by the soul. That was the point. Yeah?
Makes sense.
Okay.